Welcome to episode 20 of Nintendo Heartcast. I'm Noah. I'm hosting the episode this week. We are back after our hiatus, and when I say we, I mean that my co-host is Evan.
How's it going? And Noah, in one more episode, our podcast will legally be able to drink in the United States.
Yes, that's true. And you will, of course, be the one hosting that episode.
It's going to be a party. We'll just have to have a drinking game throughout.
We really appreciate you sticking with us and waiting a week for us to get our stuff in order. We had some stuff going on last week, but we are ready to dive back into all sorts of Nintendo news and discussion. First of all, of course, talking about what we've been playing during our hiatus, our little quick break. How about you, Evan?
Yeah, I was out of town, hence the reason we didn't podcast. And before I get started, I will say we used to be the bi-weekly podcast, Noah. And yeah. Then we've been weekly, which has been fun. And it was really weird to go a week without podcasting. It feels like we haven't talked in forever, even though this would be the normal time usually.
Yeah.
We're becoming codependent.
I don't know if that, I think that's probably unhealthy.
Oh, it's healthy for podcasting.
But yes, for podcasting, that's very good. Very, very good.
But before I left on my trip, I managed to find time to pick up Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy. So I plunged in, but I only got to play like a few hours. It was a busy so-called vacation, but I was pleasantly delighted, possibly is the way to say it, of Theater Rhythm. It was really fun, and charming's a good way to put it, with chibi visual style.
Yeah.
Very cutesy, but it works so well, and a lot of the music, even for the games that I haven't put a lot of time into, I don't know where I've heard it, but definitely just familiar tunes almost in all of the games, and just some of the best video game music around, definitely, throughout series. It's worthy of its own rhythm game. And it's really cool, the different modes and everything. I've really just been playing through the series part of it, where you kind of play through each game, three different songs, Noah.
And yeah, I think that's a really cool way to do it.
Yeah, I'm just kind of working my way through there. And then there's the dark notes, where it's like the two harder songs kind of mixed up. And I feel like you're constantly unlocking different stuff, whether it's you're building up, I think it's like different crystals to unlock a new character, or you're getting items to use, because not only is the game a rhythm game, but there's RPG elements sort of sprinkled on top of it. So it's just like a great game to pick up for 5 to 10 minutes here, or if you're playing like the series mode, no, like I said, you can easily sink an hour or two into it without a sweat.
Yeah, as someone who's been a fan of music video games for a long time, as I mentioned in the recent weekend Game On over at Nintendoja.com, I've really enjoyed this game for two different reasons, in that it's very nostalgic to, even though a lot of the characters and monsters, they're visually redesigned for the purpose of this game, so it has a unique presentation all its own for all the different Final Fantasy games. So even though the artwork might have been designed by Yoshitaka Amano in the first Final Fantasy games, and then Tetsuya Nomura in later games, and then yet another designer in some of the other ones, they all look the same once they've been redrawn in this one unifying style. But still seeing them run around and hearing that old music, it just really brings up nostalgia, and recognizing landmarks in the distance when they're traveling around to from the game storylines. Like, oh, I remember when I was little and I was playing that Final Fantasy game and I really wanted to get to the Tower of Babel. And it was on the 8-bit NES, and back then the graphics were so primitive. In my imagination, the Tower of Babel was really, really cool. And seeing yet another representation of that memory is really cool. And plus, I've purchased lots of Final Fantasy soundtracks over the years. I went through quite a binge in acquiring them for several years, and this game kind of justifies that. It's like, yeah, these soundtracks are awesome. Let's make a game that's just about that. But that said, this being a rhythm game, a lot of the time when I think of a rhythm game, I think it's generally simple, very accessible, and easy to pick up. And I would feel that given all the RPG elements put into here, now granted this isn't a true hardcore Final Fantasy that is really intricate in terms of the gameplay system, but I do feel that this is one of the more technically complex music games I've played, because it has several different modes of gameplay, but there's just all of these tactics that have to be involved with regards to who's going to be in your party. If you're going to be doing this kind of a song or this kind of event, you should swap out to characters that are more agile or have more magic powers or are stronger. And just putting all that thought into it versus a lot of music games, it's like, all right, here's the next song. It's 3 stars difficulty or it's 1 star difficulty. Go do it. Whereas this one, there's a little bit more strategy to it, which is a nice touch with it being a Final Fantasy game.
With that strategy, Noah, because you're playing the game as well, are you actually, can you edit your party members? Like, if I'm playing the series mode where you basically play field music, battle music, and then scene music, or I'm the actual name of that mode is escaping me.
Events or emotional music.
Yeah. So can you edit your party in between each one of those music
That's
events?
That's something I hadn't quite figured out. I thought that it was interesting that the game makes a point of telling you during the tutorial that that's what you should do, but I haven't figured out actually how that happens, because it just seems that you barrel on through from one event to the next. So I might be just missing something I need to do.
Okay.
I
haven't, it may be something that you utilize more in the challenge mode, where you can just pick one song and play it and build up experience, because I've basically stuck with just my main party, and I think it's kind of a double-edged sword. I think you could probably play this game, the main parts of this game, without going to the higher insane difficulties where the rhythm gets really intense, without even worrying about the RPG elements. But at the same time, if you're someone that likes to tinker with that, that's right under the surface layer of the game, which is fun to play with. So as being someone that can be sort of OCD with everything, I love checking all of those little RPG features out.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, along with like the charming visual style that I've liked, is there's just a lot of fun aspects of the game, such as before each musical rhythm section, before you like go into the field music or whatever, Noah, your 4 characters will like, each character will say like a 2 to 3 word phrase to make a sentence.
Yes.
That is always somewhat nonsensical, but really funny. And it kind of makes me think of the Square Enix title generator type deal, because they're just throwing things up on the screen, like Bravely Default. But
yeah.
But I thought that it's just something that's really funny before you play each song.
Yeah, it's usually really dramatic, and I have a feeling that those are actually quotes from bad localization. They're actual game quotes, but I'm not sure. I'm not positive. My memory's not that good.
So I know we talked about this on a previous episode, Noah, after like putting some hands-on time with the game, do you think someone that, say, has only played like one Final Fantasy game or is just not familiar with the series at all, do you think this is something they should look into picking up or playing?
Let's see. If they're a rhythm game fan, regardless of Final Fantasy fan status, I would say yes, it's a very unique take on rhythm games in general. Granted, there are no revolutionary mechanics in it. There are mechanics that we've seen in other rhythm games, particularly on DS. But it's fun and it's deep. It's got a lot of content to it. You can play it quite a bit. If you've only played a single Final Fantasy game, it really depends on whether you enjoyed that experience or not. Did you play through the game all the way to the end? And if so, I would say perhaps you should check it out, especially if you like that game. If you tried a Final Fantasy game and you never got through it, you thought it was too ponderous or complex or just frustrating, then I don't think this will change your mind.
Yeah, and I will just say that kind of my takeaway so far, and the caveats, I've only played a couple hours now, is the battle music sections are my favorite part, where you're actually like, defeating enemies, so there's four different lines that are going across the top screen, and you don't have to move your stylus to tap those four different lines, but each one of those lines lines up with one of your four party members, and so when you're tapping to the rhythm, they use that to attack an enemy on the left side of the screen. So it's like a traditional Final Fantasy battle, but I find those sections to be the most fun for me, because I feel like there's a lot of action going on, and it really makes me secretly want a Final Fantasy, even if it's just it would be a spinoff, obviously, where that's the battle system, because I think it's so much fun to, like, use that. It's, like, such a active experience for me.
That's something that's kind of interesting about it, too, is that the visual indicators for what you're supposed to do are on the top screen. They're not on the touch screen, so it's kind of a world ends with you dichotomy or split experience where you're doing stuff on the touch screen, but you're not really paying attention to the touch screen. You're paying attention to the top screen. For instance, in the roaming or journeying ones where you actually have to trace the outline of wavy lines that you're not actually touching. You're seeing them on the top screen, but you're drawing them through your feelings, I suppose, however you feel that you should move the stylus on the touchscreen. And it's kind of disjointed. I don't think that, well, I think for a touch-based system, it's kind of weird to do that. It does keep all the graphics and the pretty stuff in one area, which is nice, and the top screen is obviously the better of the two screens. It's the 3D screen, after all.
Yep.
But it feels disconnected. But then when I think about that, it's like, well, you know, there are so many music games we've played on consoles where you're not touching your television, you're using a controller that's sitting in your hand, so it's not that different of an analog.
Yeah, and it really helps clean up that space, because like you said, the music notes in all of the game modes, except for, I guess, the like emotional scenes, are traveling from left to right across the screen, and it'd be really hard, especially on the notes where you're like holding them down, if you were only using one screen. So people always talk about how this game is going to be on iPhone or Androids, but I think that may be more problematic than they think with how the game was built, because you would be covering up the next notes that you're going to play.
Yeah, yeah,
so
exactly.
I'll be curious to see what happens with that, but no, that's basically all I've been able to play over the past 2 weeks.
Well, it's understandable. You've had a lot of driving and a lot of busy family events going on to keep you busy. But it's good that you got some time to play something, because at least that can be somewhat therapeutic and vacation-like.
Yeah, it's so far, like I said, I've been delighted and having a lot of fun with the game. I'm curious to see if it actually will have legs and I'll continue to pour hours into it, because I'm in that kind of somewhat of a honeymoon phase with the game, the 2 to 3 hour mark. It'll be, as a $40 retail game, it really, there's more content there, definitely, but will I still be entertained at the 7-8 hour mark is what I'll be curious to see. But
yeah,
Theater Rhythm isn't the only rhythm game you've been playing.
Yeah, that's crazy that I got two different rhythm games for my 3DS at the same time, the other one being Rhythm Thief, which I'd read some positive press on during the last month or two, where there were reviews coming out for the game long before it actually came out. And it was a music game, and I'm a total music game junkie, and so of course anything that's remotely rhythm or music based I have to look into. And this one looked kind of cool, and I'm like, it's not an established franchise, it's coming from Sega, but these reviews are pretty good. And I tried to watch a video, and the video didn't do a good job of explaining stuff. I didn't download the demo. I just jumped for it once I found out that I could get it for $10 cheaper. Because I'm like, this was a $30 game, in my opinion. And so I went and I ordered it the moment that Evan mentioned that it was available on Amazon. Doing better due diligence research than I am. So I ordered it, and it came in the mail. And it's like, it arrived after I started Theater Rhythm. And I'm like, I don't know if I have room in my game time right now to play two rhythm games. And I was also skeptical that any game would be as interesting or as compelling to me, Evan, as Theater Rhythm was, especially with me being such a music and Final Fantasy freak. But lo and behold, Rhythm Thief is really awesome. And it's actually so good that I believe it's going to be dominating more of my time up front than Theater Rhythm will, and I'll have to put Theater Rhythm to the side. I know, that's what I thought too. But the music is really well done. It's really upbeat, poppy. It's kind of got a samba feel to it at times. But it's all very danceable because in this game you are playing a character who is a thief of incredibly priceless, famous pieces of art in Paris. And he always makes a big deal of dancing when he gets them, which is really, if that was all that it was, it would be all right, I suppose. But the game is crammed full of personality. All the NPC characters, every individual police officer has a totally different design, and the character designs remind me a lot of Professor Layton, not necessarily in the artistic sense, but that they are just, they don't look like they were made by the same artists as Professor Layton's, but they all have so much variety and character to them that a detail like that really stands out to me, and that it takes place in France, and the main character's dog has a French, phonetically French spelled wolf. And the funny thing is, I was thinking in my mind while I was just watching the game and stuff, like, wow, if his dog barks, it should be W-O-E-U-F. And it was! Which just said to me that I had synergy with this game from the get-go. And beyond this concept of a person stealing works of art, there are several different mysteries that are interlaced through it, much like a Professor Layton game, that are actually kind of interesting right from the get-go. And it's not... I feel there's actually more variety to the rhythm games' gameplay themselves as compared to Theater Rhythm. Now, Theater Rhythm has a lot of its complexity on the backside, the strategic, the technical part of it, whereas Rhythm Thief has more complexity and variety, in my opinion, in the actual tapping of the notes part. Because depending on what's going on, you'll have different types of gameplay. Like one will be a stealth mission where he has to sneak down a hall of statues and strike a pose that lines up his silhouette with the statue so that the police that are patrolling the museum don't see him when they shine a flashlight on the statue. And so there's one that's a pose. There's one where then there's little mini games that are completely optional. It's like, do you want to play this mini game where you're cooking stuff in a skillet to the beat and you're flipping it to the maitre d'? And then there's one that totally came out of left field where he's throwing meat to his dog, and instead of actually tapping stuff, you tilt the system from left to right and then back to middle for your dog to catch the food.
Huh.
But it's all done rhythmically. Yeah, it actually did. And you don't get critiqued. You don't get the grading system, I don't think, is too penalizing. And there have been a couple games so far where I didn't know what was going on, but you can immediately retry anything after you've played it. You'll get your score, you'll get your grade, you'll be told how many greats and goods and harshes and bads that you got, and you can immediately do it over if you want to.
Well, that's nice. That's one thing I didn't mention on Theater Rhythm that I like. If I like am playing a song, even in the series mode, and I get like a couple of bad notes or whatever, I can just hit the pause button and restart the song without any penalties.
Yeah, that is so nice, because one of the things that made Guitar Hero and Rock Band initially so painful is that you're graded continuously, and you could play the first two-thirds of a song really well, and there's this horrific guitar solo that's at the very end that totally takes your grade down from an A to an F, and then you fail, all because of the last 20 seconds of the song, and then you have to start over and play the whole song all the way through. And that never really felt great. And what I like about Rhythm Thief is that it's forgiving enough that I can still pass stuff if I'm totally not getting what the rules are of a particular minigame because the gameplay is so different. But I can also start over, and they're not really, really long or varying in difficulty where, like, the first part's really easy and the last part's hard.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I would definitely say that Rhythm Thief was a great acquisition for myself. And I was good to go with my hunch, and I'm really glad, Evan, that you noticed that it was being sold for cheaper than the $40 price point that I have issues with. It's definitely $30.
That's great to hear. So, Rhythm Thief, is it the story, too, that's really drawing you in?
Yeah, the story is really cool because you play this guy who leads a double life, where he's by day just a kind of a nerdy guy, and then by night he's this suave, notorious figure that the whole city knows about, and even other people, other kids wear his costume. And his mother is dead, I think, and his father is missing, but there's some kind of clue that's related to artwork that's at the museum, and so he's stealing stuff to figure out if he can find his father, who's been missing for several years. And then he runs into another character that also ties in some way to this mystical, magical element that is hidden within these historical treasures.
That's cool. I don't know if I'm a big enough Rhythm fan to get two games, or that it would be appealing to me, but it's great to hear of not one but two Rhythm games on 3DS, because like you said, the DS was obviously known for a lot of great games like Elite Beat Agents and the Rhythm Heaven game.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like 3DS is kindly taking up that mantle.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is really cool. Is there anything else you've been playing on Wii or 3DS?
No, unfortunately there's not. I believe that I just today got my copy of Heroes of Ruin in the mail, but I'm really on the fence about whether or not I'm going to keep it.
Okay, I was curious to hear now that it's out, and hopefully, I know that at Nintendojo we had a review where the game got a pretty good score, and I've kind of been reading conflicting things. It's the online, the ambitiousness of the online aspects with 4-player and the voice chat, and there's like weekly and daily challenges, is all really cool. But like I said on the last episode, the demo kind of left a bad taste. Is probably going too far, but it didn't sell me on the game. It kind of made me a little more apprehensive. Yeah, underwhelmed. I'd love to hear from any listeners if you've picked up the game, if you could kind of push us, Noah and I, one way or the other, because it's definitely a game, too, that I would love to play, because obviously it's a game, if you play co-op, I think would be so much more fun than if you're just playing it solo.
Yeah. And there's definitely an appeal to that, because think of the comic games, for instance. Those are not by any means revolutions of gameplay, or even actually you could call WarioWare this, but if they're fun to play with other people, it's good enough to make a good experience that's worth purchasing.
Yeah, and I see everyone's comparing it to Diablo, which I understand, but to me, just looking at it and that you're actually controlling your character and you're kind of using, it looks like button combos probably isn't the right word, but you're mixing and matching physical attacks with magic abilities. Reminds me of like the X-Men Legends or Marvel Ultimate Alliance games, mm-hmm. which I absolutely loved. I wish there were more games like that on console, or that those series kind of came back. So if it's got a lot in common with those, or you feel like is an adequate kind of filler for that genre and that type of games on 3DS, that'd probably sell me enough. But I'm like, you know, I mean, I want to pick it up, although Theater Rhythm's currently filling my time.
Yeah.
But it's definitely something, I mean, maybe with a 3DS XL, pick it up for that, all the new Super Mario Brothers 2. We're starting to get into that time period with 3DS where it was like DS, where it just feels like there's something noteworthy coming out every week, every 2 weeks.
Yeah, and it's, you have to make choices, you have to make difficult judgment calls.
Which is a really good thing, and I'm curious to see how that will affect sales of the console.
Well, surely it can only be good, because so far we've gotten even more system sales numbers that have rolled in since we've last recorded, and 3DS is continuing to sell very well, having sold another 155,000 units What's surprising to me is that DS almost matched that. The original DS sold over 150,000 units.
Yep, and I mean, obviously that's thanks to the price drop, which so these are the June sales numbers that came out probably closely right after our last podcast was posted, Noah.
Yeah.
And so that puts Nintendo's handheld sales at about 300,000. I think there was a quote where they had like 75% or 80% of the handheld market sales, so that puts Vita sales at 100,000 or less, which... Definitely, Sony didn't even release numbers, so Vita obviously continuing to struggle,
yeah.
Not only in North America, but in Japan as well. But yeah, 3DS, I mean, 155,000 is good. I think it was an increase over last year, June 2011, and then if you remember, Noah, last month when we talked about it, its sales were about 115,000, 120,000.
Yeah.
And to put it more in context, there weren't really any big releases in June that I can think of right now. July's definitely been a bigger month for 3DS releases. But in March earlier this year when Kid Icarus was released, 3DS sold, I think, 225,000 units. So it's really been hovering in the 2 to 100,000 region. I'll be curious to see, Noah, what happens in July, because the 3DS XL has been announced. But at the same time, you've had three pretty big games be released for it with Theater Rhythm, Heroes of Ruin, and then the months capped off with Kingdom Hearts 3D. So,
yeah, and I think 3DS, the original model, will continue to sell well because 3DS XL will have a serious price premium.
Yeah, definitely. And along with that, the 3DS now is up nearly 25% over where the 3DS was in a similar point in time after release to market, and is top portable hardware unit sales for the last 11 months, Noah. And that was a quote from NPD analyst Anita Fraser. She also says, "I'm excited by the content that's coming to market later this year and watch what impact that will have on hardware sales." So, needless to say, I know we've talked about it, I think, in a prior podcast where Iwata talked about how 3DS sales aren't where they need to be in Europe and North America. They're still doing better than the DS was at a similar point in time in its lifespan. And not only that, one thing you need to keep in mind is that the 3DS was priced $100 more than the DS was and now still at a $20 premium. So it's not only sold more than DS so far, but it's sold more at a higher price point, which is a positive for Nintendo.
Yeah, I wonder if part of Nintendo's nervousness is that the company is really firing on all cylinders to release a lot of AAA high-quality first-party games on the system to get people to buy it, whereas the first year of the original DS, there wasn't nearly as many must-have, oh my gosh, what title am I going to get next, going on. So from that perspective, it's not too surprising, and it's probably expected that 3DS is doing this well given the quality of games that are going out. But I'm curious if Nintendo is thinking, wow, do we have the resources and the depth of titles to keep doing this and keep the system going while we're also trying to juggle a launch of a new console and providing enough content for that.
Yeah, I mean, what's really interesting is we thought with the 2-week hiatus basically between our podcasts, you know, that there would be some Wii U information because there's been, I guess, rumors, in fact, that EA was going to hold an event in the middle of July, and here we are in the last third of July without any news about more EA titles. So I guess Nintendo, I'm curious if they'll really wait until the 3DS is out in Japan and North America to start talking about Wii U again, if 3DS is kind of their main focus right now. And if that's the case, I mean, the Wii U's going to be out in, I would think, October, which is a stretch at the earliest, and obviously November seems more and more like the release month.
Yeah.
But on top of that news with the hardware sales, which is great. So it's hit 5 million in North America, the 3DS, and I'm sure with the XL and the huge lineup, I'll be curious to see how quickly they could double those sales, Noah. I wonder if they really think they can hit or get close to the 10 million mark after this Christmas season.
I think it's possible with the titles that are coming out. I think it's possible.
I think it possibly is with new hardware, and then you have a new Super Mario Brothers game coming out, which starts in August, so that's going to have 5 months to sell, and we know how big those games are.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait for that.
And then you have another Mario game in Paper Mario, and then you have, obviously, Luigi's Mansion, but you have a Castlevania on that. You've got Kingdom Hearts, which is usually a pretty big seller that people kind of underestimate, I feel like, because there have been so many, but a lot of people love that franchise. Yeah, and you've got the Epic Mickey game.
That's right.
The first Epic Mickey was huge that was a Wii exclusive, and I think it sold 1.4 million units in a month. And now the Wii install base was a lot bigger, but I mean, there's not really a bigger character than Mickey. So you got Mickey and Mario coming, and that excludes, Noah, pack-in deals like they did last holiday season.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see if they do any kind of special bundles.
Oh, I'm sure with the regular 3DS, and it'll be curious to see with the XL. And speaking about software sales, along with the news of 3DS hitting the North America milestone, Ocarina of Time 3D passed more than 1 million sales in North America, which is pretty impressive. So I think it's probably I was looking through the numbers of previous podcasts now, and I think Ocarina of Time at one point was at 2.61 million units. Mm-hmm. Worldwide, so I'm guessing it's probably hovering around the 3 million mark, which I think is really good. So don't be surprised if we see another 3D remake of Majora's Mask, which has been hovering around for some time. But that joins Super Mario 3D Land and Mario Kart 7 as million sellers in North America. Now, once again, Super Mario 3D Land is leading Mario Kart 7. Mario 3D Land is at 2.1 million, and Mario Kart 7 is 1.75 million, which continues to fascinate me. That 2.1 million on 3DS on a system that's only sold 5 million units is really good for Nintendo, because the 3D Marios, I mean, they always sell in the millions, but are definitely not as big of sellers as the traditional 2D Marios.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm still surprised about Mario Land outselling Mario Kart 7, Noah, but now that I've thought about it more, it probably has a lot to do with Mario Land being a pack-in title last holiday season.
Yeah, that's a really good guess. And when you mentioned Ocarina of Time, that reminded me of the special edition 3DS that came out that was so beautiful.
Oh, yeah, the black one with the gold detailing. That's true. I'm sure that's included.
But with that in mind, if a special edition 3DS already came out for that title, I have a feeling, and my fingers are crossed, that we'll continue to see more special edition 3DSs either in the regular or XL variety for upcoming games. And I hope that they do that for the XL. That would be pretty cool, because I can't recall any other than there was one for Mario, for New Super Mario Brothers. There was a special, or was it that?
There's a Mario Kart DS Special Edition.
Yeah, but there was a DSi XL that was red and it had little...
Oh, yeah, for the 25th anniversary.
That's what it was, yeah. So fingers crossed that we see more cool setups, because I have to confess that the 3DS XL is more and more on my acquisition list. And in fact, that's also true for some of our listeners. We got a lot of really great feedback. Thank you all so much. Over on the website at nintendojo.com, tons of comments, primarily lots of people sharing friend codes. So if you haven't checked out the webpage over on Nintendojo for episode 19, our previous episode of Nintendo Heartcast, go over there and do that, because that's where Evan and I have posted our 3DS friend codes, and a lot of other people have. And so The groundwork is being laid, Evan, for us to have a truly epic and exciting multiplayer night of some game or another in the near future. But in addition to that, there was also some other great comments that we received there, as well as some stuff that we got via email. But before I get into what else is posted on the website, I want to get back to the 3DS XL, my current subconscious and sometimes conscious obsession, because Jason, and I think, I don't know if this is Intercontinental Champion Jason or not, but it's Jason from West Virginia. He wrote in and said, "Hi guys, I'll be getting the 3DS XL day one. I currently have a 3DS, but I can't resist the bigger screens. For me, the bigger screens outweigh all the negatives, such as the decrease in portability and the current colors offered. While it will be tougher to carry around, it will still fit into the pockets of my cargo pants or shorts that I normally wear. I'll deal with it. I'm also not a fan of the blue and red colors that will be available at launch. I wish black was offered, or even white or silver. But again, the large screens outweigh this concern, and I won't wait for other colors. When I jumped from the DSi to the DSi XL, there was no going back. It was actually tough to get used to the smaller 3DS screens when I got one. All DS games I play get played on my XL, not the 3DS. The 3DS XL is what I wanted from the start, and I can't wait until it launches next month. Provided I get to transfer my game data, I'll probably trade in my 3DS original size to offset some of the cost." Jason.
Yeah, Jason, I am basically right there with you. I'm curious to see what the colors look like, because I think they may look a lot better in person. But, yeah, I wish there was a different color, but I don't really know what color. I'm over the white. I thought the DS Lite and the white color was awesome back in the day, but the white color just doesn't do it. I think the white Wii U has really put me off.
Yeah.
So I think usually I get black systems, although my DSi is blue, so I'm thinking I will go red, but I am ready for the XL screen. I keep every game I play on the 3DS, all I think about is, man, this will be so much better on a bigger screen. So, and even a bigger touchscreen for Theater Rhythm. I mean, not that I really run out of space, but I just think, oh, it'll be nice to have a bigger area to tap. Just be a nice feature to have. So I am really excited. And Noah, I after you got your DSi XL, I think you're kind of in the same boat as with Jason.
Yeah, you know, and I can't recall if we talked about this on the last show or not, Evan, but I did play through all of Professor Layton and whatever, Professor Layton 4. I can't remember what the freaking subtitle is.
The Last Spectre,
thank you. Yeah, so I finished that, I think, after we recorded our last episode. And then it was back to 3DS, because it's like, wow, I got all of these great new games to play on my 3DS. But it was kind of difficult to go back from the super-sized screens. I mean, I loved playing with those large screens. I loved the easier-to-use size of the device, of the DSi XL. And going back to that little tiny 3DS, it's just like, well, this works, and it's not awful. I mean, the graphics look great. It's a higher resolution, and there's the speakers are fantastic. They're better than any model of DS, original, XL or not. But it kind of sealed the deal for me in that I really do want to have that easier-to-hold system with the brighter screens, the bigger screens, because for me, I don't take my handheld systems around hardly ever. I'll probably take my 3DS with me to Dragon Con when I go there, and if I go to Penny Arcade Expo again, those big, huge gamer events that are just perfect for that, I'll probably bring my system then, but will it be in my pocket or will it just be in a backpack? I don't know. So I'm okay with the super size as well, just like Jason said. It's worth it because of those super cool screens. It just makes a huge difference. And with as great as graphics are in 3DS, they're only going to look better when they're larger.
Yeah, and along with that, I'm excited with a better position D-pad and supposedly somewhat bigger, along with buttons that are supposed to be a little bit bigger. So
yeah, those have all been redesigned and improved tactilely.
Yep. I think after you were the one that was a little more hesitant when the 3DS XL was announced, but after you surprisingly got your DSi XL, you're definitely on board. But you still, is it the colors that you want to wait for, a different color, or just possibly a better price/bundle with the holiday season?
Well, that's a good point. a good way to put it, because in my selfish world, I would like all of that. I'd like a lower price point and better colors. But I know that with as many colors as we've already seen in the first year of 3DS's lifespan, not to mention a special edition for Zelda, I predict that 3DS XL is going to have plenty of other colors, given that I'm sure there are lots of people like me who became believers in the XL system concept after getting a DSi XL. And therefore, the 3DS XL, I believe, will sell well and justify creating additional colors. And with all these huge games still yet to come, because we're not at the end of the system's lifespan like we kind of were when DSi XL came out, there's going to be so many cool options. And so, given what I just said, that the original size 3DS is far from a mediocre or bad system, where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so torturous to play this, it's still really great. And with that in mind, I can wait to see at least as long as the holiday season and see, do any other colors come out or do some good bundles come out that really make the value proposition even better. I can wait that long.
Yeah. Well, along with that email, we got another email, Noah, from Hiawada, who said, I value Rumble in my controllers. I used a Rumble joystick to play MechWarrior on the PC. I have Rumble packs for my DS Fat and my DS Lite. I bought 4 Rumble-capable wireless GameCube controllers, and I was very disappointed that the Nunchuck does not have Rumble. Do you know, or can you find out, if the Wii U Controller Pro will have Rumble capability?
That's a good question. We do not know without doubt. I mean, my first inclination was, of course it's going to have Rumble, but apparently that hasn't been completely confirmed anywhere.
Yeah, I checked Hiawada at the Nintendo's official Wii U online page about specifics and specs, and there's a lot of information about the system, and they show the Wii U Pro controller, but they really don't have proper specs for the controller, whether Rumble's in, whether there's any type of gyroscope, gyrometer inside the controller for motion gaming. So I'm guessing it'll be something. I've seen some websites from E3 kind of say they didn't notice any Rumble, but obviously that's a prototype. If I had to go out on a limb and make a prediction, Noah, I would say that it would have Rumble. Because Nintendo's really, I mean, the Wii Remote has Rumble. I get that the Classic Controller Pro or the Classic Controller don't, but since this is going to be like the main controller for what they call like core gaming experiences, it would really surprise me if it wasn't part of the controller's functionality.
And it doesn't have to be tethered to the gamepad, correct?
Correct. It's Bluetooth.
Yeah, so with that in mind, I think that's part of the reason probably why the Wii's Pro Controller, gosh, these names are so confounding, didn't have it, because it's just the battery power that's required. It would have probably not lasted nearly as long. But if it's a standalone device, it makes sense for it to have its own Rumble.
Yeah, I'd be really surprised if it didn't. So I would think that you're probably safe, but who knows? Who knows what Nintendo will do if that's part of everything. They're always surprising. But if the Wii Remote has Rumble, and obviously the Wii Remote's going to continue to be sold, I don't know why they would have any troubles establishing Rumble within the Pro Controller. So,
I also had one other really big comment over on the website talking about communities and how much they make a difference for his Mario Kart 7 experience. And he really doesn't understand, or he loves it so much, he really wishes that Nintendo would just backwards engineer, or whatever the phrase is, patch it into 3DS so that it's a default feature of the system, that communities exist for anything, if not just the 3DS itself, the same way that it does for Mario Kart 7. What do you think of this concept, Evan? Do you think that there would be a... First of all, do you think that would be a cool idea? And second of all, do you think that it's feasible?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think we've talked about it before, if not on the podcast, then just talking over the phone possibly. And I believe Iwata from Nintendo, when talking about the Nintendo Network and their plans for the future, basically has said that communities will be a part of it, at least on Wii U, and who knows if they will be able to put it into 3DS later in its life cycle. I mean, obviously they haven't yet, and Mario Kart 7's been out for more than a half year. But I love it in Mario Kart 7, and even though Nintendo hasn't used the community's name, I feel like what they were talking about in Miiverse and at the Wii U's homepage is basically like communities where you could just see different people congregating around different game icons and everything. So I would think that that's kind of melding the community ideas with seeing what people are playing and everything. And I'd be shocked if it's not a feature of the Miiverse and Nintendo Network with Wii U. So I think it's definitely something that will be there, and I'm really excited about it because, like you, Hayawada, I've really loved it for Mario Kart 7, and it's just a really cool idea. I think it's the evolution, basically, of friends, online friends, instead of just having these mutual one-on-one agreements, you can create communities or follow communities together to play games with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like akin to what you were saying, I believe that if Nintendo is going to deliver, and they have said they have planned to unify the communities between 3DS and Wii U, that something, and when I say communities, I don't mean that with a capital C, I mean that in general. If that's going to happen, that it could, what Hayawada is asking for, it could potentially happen.
I'm excited to see what they do, but I would say there's probably a 95% chance that it's in there. I'd be really surprised if they did away with it, because I believe they've had a lot of success with the community's feature in Mario Kart 7. And I think Nintendo is even doing little contests and still, at least on Twitter, telling people to join their official Nintendo communities and everything. So it's not only something that works for consumers, but I think just from a marketing perspective, not only for Nintendo but other publishers, it's something that can really help spread the word about a game.
Yep, I agree.
Well, speaking of communities, Noah, like you said, we, in our last podcast, talked about friend codes and sharing those, and you already mentioned it. We've got a lot of friend codes being posted over at NintendoJ.com on our last podcast in the comments section. So I wrote this down, but I've added everyone. I believe the only person that hasn't added me is Ninsage. So please, Ninsage, add me. But no, it's really cool, and hopefully, like I said, speaking of communities, hopefully we can possibly establish game nights in the future, maybe play some Mario Kart 7, or if you have Heroes of Ruin, set up some times where we can quest for loot together, or, I mean, there's just more and more games coming up. I'll be curious to see how kind of like the online features of New Super Mario Bros. 2 work, because there's talk of like a worldwide coin total being collected by Nintendo, stuff like that. So definitely in the comments or send us an email for this podcast, let us know like what games you'd want to play, maybe a date or time that'd be good to meet up, because it's really exciting, all of us being big 3DS fans and playing games together, because Noah and I love doing co-op.
Yes.
But Noah, Jason over in the comments section brought up Monster Hunter Tri. I believe he's one of a few people that brought it up in the comments section and said, I love Monster Hunter Tri and have spent many, many hours with that game. But if you want to experience what the game is all about, you need to play the actual game. Capcom released a horrible demo for it.
You know, Jason was not the only one who said that. Ninsage also said that. He said, Noah, I played the Monster Hunter 3 demo, and I hated, all caps, it. Hated it, hated it, hated it. I played for a while and was like, wow, so glad I could demo this so I can never even buy it. However, my brother-in-law was going to get the game, and I really wanted to play something online with him since he lives so far away, so I reluctantly bought the game, and 500-plus hours later, Suffice to say, I loved it. And the demo was not a very accurate representation of the real gameplay. So yeah, no, my man, it's probably a little late for the Monster Hunter 3 train, but consider Monster Hunter 4 if when we get it. How can 85 billion Japanese gamers be wrong? Which was a bit of an exaggeration on the statistics part. But, yeah, like as I said in the comments, I said that I'm glad to hear that I was not out of my mind thinking that the demo was dumb. Hearing that actually from people who like the actual game, that they didn't like the demo, was reassuring. But yeah, I'm still not sure Monster Hunter will ever be my thing. But we will see. Who knows? I've been known to get swept into hype trains before, sometimes with positive results and sometimes with me kicking myself afterwards. So I don't want this to be one of those times.
This isn't a hype train. This is just fact. The Monster Hunter try is awesome, and Monster Hunter 4 will be awesome. So
you are spouting hype, Evan.
And not only that, now you have a bunch of people that want to play, so you're in no short supply for co-op partners. So
that's true.
Yeah, and Jason on top of that said, also, Evan, what is your favorite weapon in the game? I always use the lance. I kind of like just blocking and then poking the monsters and everything. I don't know what I would use in Monster Hunter 4. I really never got into like a good community with Monster Hunter Tri, sadly, Noah, because I would have really liked to use like the crossbows where you can buff other players, but that definitely...
Oh, nice.
You definitely need some better communication with your partners and everything like that. I thought that would be really fun. So whenever Monster Hunter does come out with 3DS, Capcom, please bring over 4 next year. If the game doesn't have online chat like Heroes of Ruin, maybe we can set up some Skype sessions and play. It gets me really excited. And he goes on to say, while many like to choose the most powerful, I just liked having fun with whatever thought was good enough for the job. I've been mostly switching between the Switch Axe and Hammers. Switch Axe for slicing and dicing, Hammer for the KOs. You would know what that meant, Noah, if you played Monster Hunter Tri.
I would, but I don't.
Yep. And then Ace Icarus just says, now that we are starting a podcast community, maybe we should pick a multiplayer game once Monster Hunter comes out. It may be fun to work together. Also, maybe we can get a light versus dark team together, speaking about Kid Icarus, and that's such a great idea. I haven't played Kid Icarus for a few weeks or maybe a month or two. I would love to play it, especially when the XL comes out on that bigger screen. And the multiplayer is really fun. Now we just need to not only get Noah on top of the Monster Hunter train, but Kid Icarus as well.
I thought about it during that Best Buy sale that was going on, the buy two, get one half off or whatever. I almost got Kid Icarus. I'm like, eh. I couldn't justify it. But maybe I'll regret it.
It's my game of the year right now. No doubt about it. I love Kid Icarus.
And there's so many great games still yet to come out.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm excited to see if that... How strong your love for that game will remain.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, it'll be tested because unless I just can't find the game in time, I wouldn't be surprised. I'll definitely be playing multiplayer once the XL comes out, but I think I may try to play through a lot of the levels, or a lot of the chapters, which I've done somewhat already on higher difficulty levels, and get better loot and everything. But that game is a blast. Ace Icarus also added another comment farther down. First, it's not just nostalgia for game soundtracks, since there are many songs that just don't work out of context, like Zero's theme or A Link to the Past boss music. As for Pokemon Conquest, it's one of those games where you need to beat it before the fun really begins. Without spoilers or posting an essay, once you beat the main story, there are new missions that open up that are more fun than the main arc. And buy it before September so you can get the free DLC. Lastly, there are two games you talked about in the past that I truly love, Solotarobo and Locke's Quest. I was so sad.
Oh, yeah.
Solotarobo didn't have a third story. So, yeah, Locke. I haven't played Solotarobo, but and I'm probably mispronouncing that badly. I'm sorry. I feel like that's just part of the criteria for each episode of HeartCast. I badly mispronounce the title. So.
I'm glad that you keep goals set before you, Evan.
Oh yeah, I keep them within reach. The Locke's Quest, man, that we both played that. That's really, I believe, a gem in the DS library. Really like that. Fifth Cell, who's now famous for Scribblenauts, but that was just such a cool game. And before Scribblenauts, before the whole craze for the company. So, and Noah, as for Pokemon Conquest, it looks like we will finally follow through with one of our promises and have some in-depth chatter about it for the next episode.
We're going to have a special guest from the Nintendojo staff on the show to talk about Pokemon Conquest, and that's Bradley. Bradley is a huge Pokemon fan and has really loved Pokemon Conquest, I believe, as well. So we're going to grill him on it and see if he potentially can sway one or both of us into joining the Conquest, much as so many of you out there are trying to convince me to join the hunt of monsters, known as Monster Hunt.
Can you think of any games off the top of your head, some forgotten gems for DS?
Oh, geez. I don't know if this qualifies, but I feel like it came and went pretty quickly. I thought Ninja Gaiden Dragon Sword was pretty cool.
That's so weird. No, I was thinking about that.
See, we are codependent, Evan.
I know, because when I went home, I was looking. I have DS games at my apartment, but there were so many games for that system that I didn't take them all with me, and I saw Ninja Gaiden, however you want to say it, at my parents' house, and was just thinking what a novel concept that wouldn't really work with the 3DS, but just a really cool way to utilize the DS, and I agree, I think it was most likely overlooked. So a game that I was thinking of that I always talk about, but it definitely didn't sell as much as it should have, is Henry Hatsworth and the Puzzling Adventure.
Oh, yeah.
Just if you are a fan of side-scrollers at all, whether it's Mega Man, whether it's Mario, whether it's Metroid, I can't say it enough. Henry Hatsworth, definitely top five game for the DS system. Possibly top three, just an awesome game for you to pick up. So those are some forgotten gems. We'll see how long we remember that, Ace Icarus, but please give us some games on DS that you were forgotten gems, or even with a Wii. I mean, the console's life cycle is ending, and some people's opinions has already ended. It'd be fun to bring up some of those games as well.
Yeah. Well, good show, Evan.
Oh, yeah.
We got back into the groove pretty easily.
Oh, well, when you have codependency, that's how it works. When you're not podcasting, basically.
So, yeah.
This is the easy part.
Listeners, thank you for downloading this episode of Nintendo Heartcast. We hope you enjoyed it. I need to add a whole bunch of friend codes, so I'm going to do that after I turn off the recorder here. So if you've been wondering where I'm at in your friend list, look now. I should be in it if you've shared your friend code. And if you haven't already and you want to get into the pre-multiplayer preparation, leave your friend codes over on Nintendojo.com under episode 20. But don't forget, episode 19 has like a dozen friend codes over there, which is great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And please, if you didn't put your friend code in, put it in episode 20, and feel free to repost if people are doing that in the comments section, and let us know what you've been playing, because Noah and I like to hear that. We love to hear what the community's playing, because you may give us insight on a game that we haven't played and might get us interested in picking it up. So
that's right.
Always fun, and I think it's just the calm before the storm, Noah. I think in the next couple weeks, where not only is the XL coming out, I mean, it comes out in Japan and Europe next week, but in a few weeks in North America, but I think we're going to start getting a lot of Wii U news, and the hype will start building up for the console, so that's exciting. So it's kind of the calm before the storm right now.
Yeah, I agree. There is much, much more to be learned, and I have a feeling at Nintendo's press conference when it announces the price and the date that we could potentially see new game stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I look forward to it. So, yes, that should be a wrap for episode 20. Once again, thank you for listening to us. Feel free to drop us an iTunes review, share your friend code, send us an email if you would like that to showmail@nintendojo.com, and we will be back on regular schedule, regular codependent schedule, next week.
Music used in this podcast comes from Overclocked Remix, a not-for-profit website dedicated to the video game music remixing community. You can check the site out at www.ocremix.org. Here are the specific songs we use in the production of our show. Our introduction uses the remix Tucson Hits the Road, created by remixer DJ Pretzel. The original tracks Boy Meets Girl from Nintendo's SNES game Earthbound. The original composers were Hirokazu Tanaka, Hiroshi Kanuzu, Keiichi Suzuki, and Toshiyuki Ueno. Growing Up Nintendo features the remix Skyward by remixer C418. The original composer is Ballad of the Goddess from Nintendo's Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. The original composers were Hajime Wakai, Koji Kondo, Mahiro Yokota, Shio Fujii, and Takeshi Hama. Player input and other discussion segments feature Zibijian Midnight by remixer Vigilante. The original tracks are Brinstar Red Soil Wetland Area, Kraid's Chamber, Opening, and Samus Aran's Appearance Fanfare from Nintendo's Super Metroid. The original composers were Keiji Yamamoto and Minako Hamano. The Master Key discussion features the remix Thunderstruck by remixer Big Giant Circles and violinist someone named Jeff. The original tracks were Above Ground, Lost Woods, and Windmill Hut from Nintendo's Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. The original composer was Koji Kondo. Additional segments include highlights from Beneath the Surface from remixer Vigilante. The original track was Aquatic Ambience from Rare's Donkey Kong Country. The original composers were David Wise, Evelyn Novakovic, and Robin Beanland. Our conclusion uses the remix Pachelbel's Ganon from remixer DJ Pretzel, based on the title theme and ending theme from Nintendo's Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. The original composer was Koji Kondo. If you like these remixes, you can download more at www.ocremix.org and find many of the original game soundtracks for purchase at Amazon.com or iTunes. Additionally, many of the games mentioned are available for purchase on Wii or 3DS's Virtual Console or at retail stores. Once again, thanks for listening to Nintendo Heartcast.